Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 on RAID.ie. Now we're joined in Studio 6 by David Gilna. David was a young actor on the cusp of being cast in a movie in Hollywood when a bolt from the blue changed everything for him. And David's here to tell us his story. Good afternoon, David.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having me in the studio.
Yeah. So a bolt from the blue is a play written and performed by yourself. It's in the Lark Theatre in Balbriggan, Wednesday 9th of October, and tickets are €20, thelark.ie. So we get that out of the way in case we run
brilliant,
out of time.
Yeah. Isn't that? It'll be my last show in Ireland to this play, yes.
And this is a play about something that happened to you. So had you just done your leaving cert? You were on a J1, were you?
Yes, I was on a J1. So I was just in first year in college, studying theatre studies in Coolock, Clochadoulic. And J1 visa, like I did a few radio plays in RTE, a few bits and bobs growing up. I went to a place called the Factory in Rings End.
Oh, yeah. So Jim Sheridan,
Eamon Farrell, Jill Doyle. So I was around that and I was excited about the industry.
And Eamon Farrell is Colin's brother.
Yeah. Yes. So he was my dance teacher. Right. Jill Doyle was my drama teacher. Conal Kearney, who passed away, the late Conal Kearney, he was my acting coach. But yeah, I had this love of performing arts. And so we all went J1 visa to America, and I auditioned a few times before I went to America, but like anything you do, you audition, you won't hear back, you forget about it. So I picked Boston. Little did I know that everyone in Boston is Irish or related, in South Boston especially. I got a job as a builder or a labourer working in South Boston, and it was an amazing experience away from my parents for the first time. We rented this place that had no furniture but had this beautiful rooftop of Boston and watching the skyline. And we were 18, full of enthusiasm, blind confidence. We had a great time. And I was renovating houses on L Street in Southie. So really kind of rough and ready Boston.
Yeah, but you felt sort of at home there, because as you say, there were so many Irish people there.
Yeah, I lived on the corner of P Street and I literally walked 15 minutes to work every day. And to me, with my shorts and my boots, going to work every day, getting paid cash, a lot of cash, and watching this Irish rites of passage that people who left in the late 70s, the early 80s, and hearing stories of people leaving Ireland in the 90s, and then me coming over in 2004, you know, there was an excitement to it.
Had you parked the acting at that stage?
No. What happened was, I auditioned for a thing called Helen of Troy, and I got down to the last two. So it could have been a life-changing experience, but like that, you're 18, you forget about it. And I auditioned for a few films, thanks to Eamon and Jill in America, didn't think anything of it. And then on the day I got struck by lightning, July 2nd, 2004, one of the girls I was living with told me to ring my agent because I didn't have a mobile phone. So I took out a pay phone. You know those international calling cards with the 28-digit numbers before you dialed? I rang my agent and she's like, "Have you got good news? I want you to go to Hollywood next week for a table read." And I was just like, oh my God. Because everybody knows in this industry, you're only as good as your last gig. So I was covered in sawdust working on the building site in South Boston in L Street. And then next week, they wanted me flying off to Hollywood. And I was just so excited because I just knew, like, wow. I grew up on American pop culture, watching television shows and the amount of shows even on RTE, which had been American shows and American pop music, that I was going to live in this American dream. And there was a payphone across the road, and I rang my parents with this excitement because your parents and your family lived through the life of an artist, the highs and lows.
And this was, you can't say the name of it, but this is a really well-known franchise movie.
Really known franchise movie, yes. Yes. And I was just go with the flow, and literally, I'll never, as clear as day, number 606 in South Boston, and it was like one of these old school houses, and we're renovating four floors. So we were turning each floor into an apartment, and there was a balcony on the fourth floor where I used to just throw all the rubbish.
So you'd got the call, but still went into work?
Still went into work.
Okay.
And I knew that I was going to go out celebrating with the lads in Boston and have a few pints and whiskey. And there was a ladder on the balcony and there was kids playing in the pool next door. And I just remembered their innocence of their laughter. It reminded me of my own summer growing up, just playing football on the green or hanging down by the jack or just sitting on the wall. And the ladder started to move. And as I went to grab the ladder, that's when the lightning struck and it hit the ladder, went through my right hand, across my chest, earthed out of my left foot, blown the sole off my left foot, and I flew about 6 or 7 feet back into the room. I didn't feel any pain at the time. I just felt this energy and this heat and the smell of my own burning flesh is something that's kind of stuck into my own subconscious, and then I landed on the ground, and then I went to sleep. And then I don't know how long it was, but when I woke up, I could hear the kids screaming next door. And then I heard the loud, thundering boots of the lads who were working on another building site coming up to me. And like, the first two people who came up to you were Anto and Mick. They weren't the sharpest tools in the box, but they have a heart of gold. I think Mick lit me a cigarette and I don't even smoke. I was just lying on the ground covered in lacerations. And they kind of picked me up. And I remember the bang. I now remember being in pain. There was a cigarette in my mouth. I think one of the guys was going to go across and get me alcohol. Everyone didn't know what to do, so they brought me to the Boston Medical Center. And I think that's when I realized time, the essence of time, how you know you're punching out your last, you know, ticket in life. My best friend Stephen Russell came rushing to the hospital. Insurance was a big thing. I know I wasn't going to get past a certain area in the hospital without insurance. And luckily I had my J1 travel insurance. I don't think Lightning is covered there anymore. but I remember telling my best friend, Stephen Russell, I've never told anyone I loved them before. I never told my parents I loved them before as an 18-year-old. It was great to express my feelings in a rehearsal room or on stage because I was pretending to be somebody else or channeling a voice or a character. But me, David Gillan, never told anyone they loved them. And I looked at him and I just said, buddy, I love you, but don't call my parents because of the time difference. My last wish and my last breath was call them in the morning, ring my auntie and uncle in Florida or my auntie and uncle in Canada first.
That was very thoughtful of you, David. Because you didn't want them staying up all night.
No, because there was nothing they could do about
it.
So I was very lucky that I was on a J1 visa and I celebrated the great news about getting the film and the franchise. And then I was thinking to myself, I don't want to put that on if the last thing they have of my memory. And that's what I thought about it. But I told my best friend that I loved him. He's one of my best friends in the world. And the feeling I had that I never told my parents that I loved him. I thought, oh my God, I don't even know what love is. And is this my last moment as an 18-year-old fella on the J1 visa covered in sawdust?
Were you been overdramatic or why did you feel you were dying?
Well, I knew I was dying. It's like you lose this sense of energy from your crown and it escapes your body. So I could feel this sense of numbing coming through my body. I'll never forget when the nurse put her hands on me. I was physically, let's say, frozen. That the blood around my life organs was trying to keep me alive and I could just see myself. And then I closed my eyes and then I was in a coma. I just drifted to sleep. And then I woke up in the ICU in the Boston Medical Center.
How long after?
I would say it could have been 10 hours.
Right.
And then I was in the ICU ward. But I was in pediatrics because I was 18. So the sound of a parent crying, losing a child or an infant to cancer, leukemia, or you have babies in incubators, and then you have me who's 18. Because
you're a young adult.
You're really a young adult, yeah. But you're still in America. You're in an intensive care unit. And I think these things in my mind that I heard or overheard are the sense of how cruel life can be, not to me, but to those kids and those parents.
And when did the realisation hit you that you've been struck by lightning? Did you have any idea
No.
that that's what happened?
I heard the bang. Heat, the smell of my skin burning. I didn't feel pain until I woke up.
But when did somebody... Somebody copped. Somebody must have witnessed
so
it, did they?
The kids next door, they saw the flash.
Right.
The builders heard the bang. My heart stopped for a period of time. The lacerations, the sole of my left foot being torn apart.
Oh, when you said the sole of your foot,
so
I thought...
Basically, the lightning needed it somewhere to earth out and my left foot was as fast as exit. So from the ladder to my right hand.
So it was actually the skin?
The skin.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I thought you meant your shoe.
Oh, no, the skin. So what happens is there's like 300,000 volts of electricity passed through your body. So I've got certain small lacerations on my body where the skin... where I started to bleed or lacerations and not in other parts of my body. So with lightning, there's like an online cloud that everyone who's been struck by lightning has a different experience. So the specialists in the Boston Medical Center who saved my life were fantastic because time was of the essence because my heart had stopped 3 times in total and your balance and your sense of death is in your hearing and your soles of your feet. So I was missing one and my ears were completely shattered. My vision, I couldn't really see at that point. I could just see shadows. So I didn't know if I could see again was the initial thought process, because all I could see was shapes. I couldn't see colours anymore.
And what were people saying to you, David? You'd come round. You're in ICU and then you're getting a little bit better, so you're aware of what's going on around you. What were the doctors saying to you?
Analytically, it's just like, we found out you've been struck by lightning. Okay, you were asleep for a period of time. You've got no sensitivity in certain parts of your body. Okay, and you got more good news. But they started to go through the process and what was going to happen. And my parents were en route coming over to see me, and what could happen and the journey I was going to go on. And my vitals, my heart was really important. But to me was, will I ever walk again? Will I ever see again? That's when the realization started to think, oh my God, is this it for me? You know, because I couldn't move from the neck down at that moment in time.
Yeah.
So I tried to move my left hand and I couldn't, my right hand and I couldn't. And then the fear started to drift over me. And then I went to sleep again. I think I went to sleep 3 times during those 5 nights, like switched off to another place, let's say.
In a coma.
And you're kind of fighting to stay alive, because I don't know what's next in the afterlife. But I remember taking my first breath back in the ICU and I felt like this body didn't belong to me. I felt like a stranger in my own body, because I'd seen things and I heard things of maybe of stuff from my family, which I haven't heard of, but I could have been present as a child.
Right.
So I went through all these different memory chambers, and music was a big part of that. And people's voices and the smells of foods came back. Like
all in the coma.
All in the coma. And then you're dancing between the realms of life and the afterlife and a dream state stance, and you don't know what's real or what's physical. And you're.
And were you on medication? The reason I ask that is that, you know,
I would probably say, yeah, yes, they would say morphine could have been kicking in there, right? Yeah.
That could have been a bit of it.
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club.
I'm not taking away from your experience.
No. It was definitely, I'd say, yeah. High on life, Ray. Yeah. Literally.
But I can't remember his name, but I've interviewed him a couple of times, a neuroscientist who was in a coma, and he talks about his experience in a coma and an afterlife and seeing these heavenly bodies and people that were dead in his life and all that sort of thing. And he, you know, he's a scientist, but he believes this, you know. So.
Oh, yeah, no, I believe in, like, I have a different perspective on life. And it's interesting, when I was coming through, my mother's staunch Catholic, very religious, prayer groups, that's her thing. She's in hospital at the moment and she's a warrior right now. And my cousin, Alison Keaton, is a psychologist.
Uh-huh. Yes, regular on the show.
What my cousin and my auntie did was, if I could focus on a white light and I could focus on moving that white light through my body to my little toe or my thumb, but if I could concentrate how powerful the mind is and to not let me feel defeated, because I was being told all these things that what was wrong with my life and what was going to happen in the recovery process.
Right.
So I felt like I got over being struck by lightning. The skin will heal, but how will I physically move again? How will I get strength again? I think the doctors did their job in telling me what was wrong with me. Being told that you never feel touch again, to kiss somebody. I'd never loved anybody. I'm told I might not be able to have kids or kind of full movement again. So Alison, Catherine and my mother all have their own different viewpoints, but it was mum is the power of prayer and the power of a higher power, or Alison, my cousin, my auntie, is more about a healing, a natural heal thing, and then the mind, that how important the mind is.
Yeah.
So this was a lot going on as an 18-year-old to think, wow, because I remember I felt I'd gone through everything, and there was this great moment with the head of neurology, Dr. Chang, and he was an incredible person, but he was just letting me know the reality of my situation. And my mother just stopped him. She's a lady. And she just said, son, can you feel my hand? I said, no. She goes, can you see me? I said, I can. She goes, are you hungry? I said, I'm always starving. She says, never worry in an empty stomach. She realized, yeah, typical Irish mammy. She realized it was time for me to maybe get out of the hospital environment. Yes. I was in. But I was going to start rehab in Florida, which is the lightning capital of America. The irony doesn't get lost to me. But the idea was, okay, his vitals are back. And now let's get this guy walking. Let's get him physically strong again. And there's these things will take a long time, but let's see how that process.
So the heart, for example, that you know, there's electrics in the heart.
Yeah.
There's electrics in the brain, obviously synapses, all that sort of thing. And you get 300,000 volts.
Through your body.
Through your body. So it messes with the electrics in the body.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you've got to understand that from a scientific point of view, how can the human body survive that?
Yes. Well, I'm asking you, ask yourself the question, answer it now.
Why did I only burn certain parts of my body?
Yeah. Why?
Yeah, why did my heart only stop for a certain period? I don't know the answers.
And they did the doctor say to you that you were very lucky to be alive?
Blessed to be alive. But right. Someone said to me, if the lightning had hit my left hand, there was something to do with the algorithm, the electricity that would have just completely, the heart would have...
Ah, I see, because it would have hit the heart sooner.
The heart would have pretty much blown up, as they said. Right hand, it came across and down.
Okay.
But if it was the left hand, they said there would be something that could have impacted the heart at a...
So you go to Florida for recovery and you're all this time you're realising what happened to you, that it might affect your life forever.
Totally, yeah.
And you were telling me before we went on air that you were reluctant to tell anybody the story.
Oh, I didn't tell anyone the story for 4 years, yeah.
Why so?
When I came back, I was fearless because at one point I was probably not walk again or feel touch again or have children again or get an erection again. And these are all these things that have been told to me as an 18-year-old. And they're all the things I really cared about, you know. And then all of a sudden, a doctor told me to start writing down every day. If I was to write down what I experienced as a form of therapy. So I was a trained actor. I studied all my life. Never picked up a pen. I've been writing every day since I've been struck by lightning.
Right.
So that was what saved me. Because it was easy for me to write down my feelings and my emotions. But I didn't have to tell anybody because I was writing them on the page. So it took me 4 years to realise I'd put some sort of really badly written play together. But that was the beginning of my healing process because it took me about 10 years mentally and physically to get over the accident because we shouldn't do it, but Irish people sometimes do. I took what happened to me, I put it in the box and I buried that box deep into my subconscious. But over the years, it started to scratch at the surface.
Why did you do that? Were you afraid of the implications of what happened?
Implications of the truth, implications of what I experienced, questioning myself about my own religious beliefs, about my own belief in the afterlife.
Go on, you have to expand on that now.
So easy that to me, going forward, life is all about energy and frequency. I'm quite eccentric now, you could say, but if I don't like the energy of a person, I ain't going to give them my time or work with them. That was never installed in me. I can feel people who just drain your energy. I don't know what's next, but I do believe in spirits, souls, people we've lost. I believe they're with me. So I believe...
Did something happen to you?
Fizzy, I saw myself. I know it sounds all wacky tobacky.
No, go on.
But I did physically see myself in the ICU. But the one thing that stays with me was...
So you were floating above yourself.
I could see myself.
Now, that guy says that as well. Dr. Eben Alexander is his name.
I could have been high in opioids, morphine.
Yes.
But
yes.
I did see myself.
Okay.
And the second thing was, I prayed and I said, if there is a God, I'm 18. And please, please, please give me another chance at this place we call planet Earth.
And did you say you would...
It was just me begging him.
Right, okay.
But I saw some dark things and thoughts, you know, people peeling away at my skin. I saw a real cruel, it was like I could feel pain and everyone's pain and all the cruelty that some people have suffered in this lifetime. And I felt I was thrown into that. Not me personally, but I've seen things that have happened to people, like the injustice that's happened to so many people and so many institutes throughout the decades. Like I felt like, could that be in a memory of me from watching films, from reading? I love history, you know, that kind of way. I don't know, but I did believe in a higher power.
Okay, here's a question for you then.
Yeah.
David Gilner, who was struck by lightning in Boston in 2004. Yeah. Do you think that the accident... rewired you?
100%.
Right.
Great, you could take all that information and ask me a lovely question like that because, yes, I totally agree with you.
Right.
Totally reprogrammed my whole way of life. Sleeping is not really a thing for me, but I can rest.
You look like a man who gets a lot of sleep. You don't.
If you rest, you see.
Right.
You can turn off your phone, you turn off your television, don't write, don't snack. If you rest the body. So it's sleep, like physically deep sleep, about, you know.
Okay, and where are you at? Have you made a full recovery?
Full recovery, ish. Yeah, ish. Because like what insurance company always say, well, you were struck by lightning, do you get me? Like, so it's the sensitivity issues, yes, 100% sensitivity issues, nerve damaging issues.
There are, or there still are?
There okay. still are, like this. Gotcha. I've got a thing with my thumb that I'm going into the doctors on Wednesday. I'd be very reluctant to go back into a hospital or to a doctor. When I got COVID, my doctor had passed away, a lovely man from Swords, but I hadn't got a doctor, so I had to get a doctor. So I signed up into the... So I was very lucky, touch wood, that I've been in and out of hospital with my heart and sensitivity issues.
And both of them are related to that?
Related to that, yeah.
Okay.
But I, in my mind, let's forget about that. I'm here. I yes. can move, I can walk, I can talk.
And you're telling your story through
yeah,
the play?
Through the play, yeah. And that's been a journey of... A guy came to see me. I've done the show, my 87th show coming to the end in the Lark in October. I've toured America, England, Europe, and I love chatting to people because people have different experience. Lightning sounds very extreme, but I was given a second chance at life and I'm rewired differently. So I can have this beautiful conversation about the darkness I went through, the shadows I went through, to find I saw the world grey. The world was all grey to me. I didn't see any colour after my accident. And now I can see this beautiful energy of light and love and feeling and emotions and telling people who I love, that I love them, telling people when I'm in a dark place, I'm in a dark place. And I can connect with people because it's honesty, I'm bleeding on the pages because I don't have to prove myself to anyone. I would call myself a social loner. I love a drink, I love being in the pub, I love telling stories, but I also like to be a recluse with my thoughts and my ideas and right. this beautiful place that it's just me on my own watching the world go by and connecting to stories and this story especially.
Right. There's a movie in it.
What? Yeah. Well, like, funny enough, so this is the truth for anyone out there.
Right.
I wrote a really bad play. The actors were amazing. There was 26 actors in the play in Samuel Beckett in Trinity in 2008. Yeah. Peter Sheridan came to see the play. He said, David, you've got potential. But, you know, fire 20 actors and maybe you just have 4 or 6 if you want to make money. But we were dreamers. The play went to the Axis in Ballymun. Ray Yates is the head of Dublin Arts. He directed the play, gave us hope. Colin Kearney came involved. Play went to London. And then producers came to see the play. I made a lot of money, Ray. I spent every last penny of it because I thought this dream was going to come. But I sold one of my plays to the big studios.
Ah.
Yeah, so the former... won't mention a name, but studios came in, they offered me a lot of money, a big agency in London, signed the deal, made the money, but the film never got made.
Uh-huh.
And that taught me about ownership, it taught me about rights, it taught me about the
so
rights.
They still own that?
They still own that, it's sitting on the shelf and one day it will get made. But Arthur Lappin, who was Jim Sheridan's business partner throughout the years, he found in my contracts that I didn't sell my life rights.
Right.
And that's the only reason why I can tell this story.
Uh-huh.
Because
so you
this
can't
is,
tell the specific story, as in the name of the movie and all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
you have
this
your
is,
own.
This is because if they have to do that after me, you write me a check with a few more zeros.
Right.
But that's why it's important for people out there to know your rights as a writer.
Yeah, yeah. A Bold from the Blue, written and performed by David Gilna. It's in the Lark Theatre in Balbriggan, Wednesday, 9th of October at 8 o'clock. Tickets €20, thelark.ie for tickets. David, that's a fascinating story and you tell it so brilliantly and it's been a real pleasure meeting you.
No, it's an honour. Thank you very much for having me in the studio.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.